Feast or famine at sunlight. Some months I have no sunlight awards. This month I have 5. Just great. We love it, right? And I probably have to put my glasses on to read them. The first one actually goes to Colleen. And let me read what they say here. Colleen has worked very diligently to research, recommend, and implement a product development workflow collaboration tool. Basically what that means is there's a tool that helps them keep track of different projects. They can have discussions and talk about where things are, and that's basically what it is. After spending significant time and energy researching various options over several months, she implemented and tested the Kanban tool, an online workflow tool. This inexpensive tool allows teams to graphically see where they are in any stage of implementing and tracking projects. This fills a gap that K4, which is what we've been using, could never really do for us. After some extensive testing and use by the team, we are now using this tool within product development, and it is available to any team or person in the company that needs to track or implement multi-step projects. You know, if you think about an instructor's guide, you have a writer that's working on it, you have a proofsetter, a typesetter, you have a proofreader, all of those steps have to be tracked, and that's what this type of thing does. By using this team tool, everybody has visibility into the process at any stage and can add or modify as needed. Thank you, Colleen, for taking the initiative to find a better tool to manage the complex processes within product development and potentially elsewhere. Thank you. And this is the first one for you, I should have done this. Thank you very much. And the rest of them, I'm going to just read Nate's, and then I'll hand out the other ones as they go. Nate, along with Susan. Thank you, Susan. Mark, who's not here yet, he must be driving in from Highlands Ranch. Michaela. Thank you, Michaela. And Lisa. I saw you earlier. There you are. Thank you, Lisa. Took on the responsibility of conducting the annual inventory count for this year. With fewer people and from the start, they were ahead of schedule and finished up 2 weeks early from the projected date. And the inventory count was as accurate as ever. Partially what happens with inventory is we get lots of little bits and pieces. And do you count them as ones? Do you count them as gross? Do you count them as... So sometimes there's a lot of adjustments that have to take place with inventory. This year was the cleanest. We have to do an addition or a subtraction in our numbers because we want to have a clean count for our financial people. This year's inventory went very well, happened ahead of project time. So thank you, Nate, for conducting our inventory count, saving us time and man hours in the process, for ensuring accuracy, and for completing the entire project ahead of schedule. And that's actually the whole team. And for Lisa, we will add that she also orchestrated and managed the whole team. So thank you all for that. Eek. So Nate, start with you because you're the closest, and yours is the first. And I had only 4 of those. That's why you all got a different one. Michaela, you're here. Thank you. Appreciate it. Eek. Yeah, it's coming. Sorry. I could have done that a little more handily. Mark isn't here. Lisa. Oh, Susan, you didn't have a sheet here, but you're listed on there. I don't know why. That's strange, isn't it?
Thank you.
What happened there? So I'll give you the candy bar anyway. I don't do the papers. They just handle that for me, which is great. Well, I think the office looks very nice. Thank you all for decorating for Christmas. And I thought today I would actually talk about Christmas because I'd like to take it from the angle of the nativity. And we often see this little baby laying in a manger. We think, what is up with that? Why does that happen? There is a reason. Sorry, it starts with Luke, where he tells us that Caesar Augustus, who was the ruler of the entire world at that time, it was Rome. Israel was part of Rome. And Caesar Augustus, sitting in Rome, which is in Italy, said, everybody needs to go back to their hometown and be counted. So everybody shuffled. Think about Israel, which is a long, narrow country. People who lived here went back home here, and some of the people here went back there. And what happened was Mary and Joseph, who were Jesus' parents, traveled to Bethlehem, which is a very small town. And it says in the Bible that the one inn in town was full. And if you think about a small town and all this upheaval and all this travel and all this moving around, you can understand why the inn would potentially be full. And it says in the Bible that they went to the innkeeper looked at Mary, who was 9 months pregnant and huge. Think about traveling at that time of year and not knowing where you're going to stay. And he said, well, I have a stable I can put you up in, which was very nice of him and probably was a little more private even than the inn would have been. So when you see a manger and you see Jesus laying in this trough, it's because of a historical event that sent him there. But why did they go to Bethlehem? That's what I want to talk about today. The Jews kept very careful genealogical records. When you read the Old Testament, every so often you'll come up with, you know, this tribe had this many people in it, and it had, these are the key names that were in there. I mean, you'll just read those genealogies and think, oh, my eyes are glazing over. But they were very important to the Jews, because what happened was the Jews traced all of their history back to 12 brothers who came to settle the land. Those 12 brothers were each given a chunk of land within the land of Israel. So you could actually carve it up like we have states today. Each of those was named for one of those brothers. So they're tied not only to genealogy, but they're tied to chunks of land as well. Joseph and Mary were tied to a genealogy and a chunk of land that came out of Bethlehem. So that's why they made that travel. And I'd like to talk about one of the stories of their ancestors that are in here, because the ancestors are a huge part of the Old Testament. Whenever you read a story in the Old Testament, it links it to one of these brothers' names. Okay, this person was of Ephraim. It was one of those brothers. This particular brother was named Judah, this region of the country. There was a man in Bethlehem, and it happened to be a time of famine. So this man picked up his wife and his two boys and left Bethlehem, which is called the city of bread, and moved all of them over to Moab. Thought maybe he'd do a little bit better there. They were going to just sojourn for a season. The man was named Elimelech, and he took his wife, Naomi, and his two boys along. They were going to sojourn in Moab for just a season, just while the weather was, you know, settling down, maybe get a little bit of a job. They ended up staying for 10 years. During those 10 years, his two sons married Moabite women, which for Jewish people was forbidden, but it did happen. At the end of 10 years, all three men died. Ooh, all of a sudden you have three women who are widows living in the land of Moab. At that time period, if you were a widow, you were in the lowest level of society. You couldn't own land. You had no property rights. You had very few rights anyway, and you were utterly dependent on the charity of others. You did not want to be a widow. Most of us don't want to anyway, but it was worse then. So Naomi said, okay, this is terrible. I'm going to go back to Bethlehem. She said to her two daughter-in-laws, who were Moabite women, oh, don't bother coming back with me. There's nothing for you there. Just go back to your families and, you know, it'll probably be better here. And one of the daughter-in-laws took her up on that and went back to her home. One of them, named Ruth, said to Naomi, one of those beautiful phrases that you'll sometimes hear at weddings, you know what, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. One of those beautiful, beautiful declarations. And Naomi said, well, okay, if I can't dissuade you. So they crossed the Jordan River. They walked along the Dead Sea, which is one of the lowest, it is the lowest place on earth. They wandered the walk through the wilderness. It's, if you've been there, it's this dry and desolate. There's no trees. It's, you know, kind of shrubby and rocky. And it was actually relatively dangerous in those days. And they climbed the road to Jerusalem. And even today, cars have a tough time taking that road because you go from below sea level to 3,000 feet. That's where Jerusalem is, on this huge hill. So you drive up and it just sits there. It's this kind of majestic thing, but you're kind of winding to get there. So they're climbing this hill to get Jerusalem. Once they hit Jerusalem, they travel south for about 5 miles to this very small village of Bethlehem. Came back to her homeland. In the interim, her land had been taken over by someone else. So Ruth, her daughter-in-law said, well, I'll go out and do the work that's allowed us. In those days, one of the ways they provided for the poor was farmers, when they harvested their crops, they were required to leave some of the crops in the field. And that was a provision for the indigent, for the poor, and they were allowed to follow the harvesters and collect the grain that was just left laying there. And Ruth, by chance, ended up in the field of a very wealthy man named Boaz. So she collected grain all day, brought the grain home, and her mother-in-law said, so where did you go today? She said, well, I harvested at this man Boaz's place. Naomi said, oh, Boaz is our kinsman redeemer. Another one of those really cool concepts of ancient Israel. A kinsman redeemer was a relative who had very specific roles within a family. He was somebody who would be somehow tangentially attached to the family, and there were five things that they did. Let's see if I can find my notes here in my pencil. They would buy back a fellow Israelite from slavery. That would be one of the things that they would do. So somebody had to have some cash to be able to do that. They had to be an avenger of blood. If someone was murdered, they had to make sure that they were the ones that went and took care of that because that was required. They had to buy back land from a family that had been forfeited. Sounds like Naomi, doesn't it? And they had to carry on the family name by marrying a childless widow. Two of those would fit very well for Naomi. So they went to Boaz and worked that all out. And the problem was there was a kinsman redeemer who had more rights to buying back the land. Because, of course, land in small Israel has great value. This one happened to come tied to Ruth, which made it a little less appreciative. So anyway, that worked out, and Boaz agrees to marry Ruth. And the men of the gates, because that's where all the industry happened in the city, that's where all the decisions were made, the men of the industry blessed him, and they reminded him of his lineage. They tell him, may your marriage to Ruth be fruitful, like Rachel and Leah. And I mentioned that there were these 12 brothers, and they came from two women, Rachel and Leah. Very fertile, right, to have 12 children come from two different women. May you be as fertile as these women. This heritage, always reminding back where you're coming from, where your roots are, what your life looks like. And like our ancestor Perez, who founded this city of Judah, may you remember your roots. So they mentioned the three different ancestors that are key. Perez being one of Judah's children that actually founded the city that they're all living at this time. So again, location, genealogy, linked together, very important for all of this. It says that Ruth and Boaz went on and had a baby. They named him Obed. And then it says, and Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David. I think most of us would recognize the name of David. Boaz and Ruth's great-grandson was King David, the one that fought Goliath, the one that brought Israel to so much honor, and it was probably the pinnacle of Israeli history. David was kind of the greatest of kings that they'd ever had, and this is their grandparents. So again, we're seeing this lineage, this place, and we get to this famous king that is in Jesus' lineage. So I say to you, why does it matter? Who cares about all those old days? I think sometimes it's good to know the story. You see that baby in a manger and you think, what is up with this and who cares? He's there because of this lineage and this location. Boaz came back, bought this land, so Naomi and Jesse and Obed and David could come back to this same land that Jesus ultimately was born as part of his history. For me personally, I take great pleasure and joy in knowing God has orchestrated history to such an nth degree. Boaz and Ruth lived about 1,300 years before Jesus was born. This lineage goes back, if we think about it, you know, about 40 years ago we celebrated our 200th anniversary of our country. Wow, we thought that was amazing. 1,300 years is a lot longer ago. And what happened was, Bethlehem became the place where great kings came from. There was a whole line of kings that came out of this Judah, this region of Israel. One of the books of the Old Testament, Kings, only deals with the kings that came out of this region. This is a critical piece of Israel's history. Another piece that comes into the nativity set are the wise men. They come from the east because they saw this star. They show up. Okay, where do we find the king of the Jews? They ask the ruler of the land at that time. And the ruler, of course, doesn't know. He don't really want to know anyway. He wants to rule himself. So he goes to the religious leaders and he says, so where is the king going to be born? And it says, they say, oh, he's going to be born in Bethlehem, based on a prophecy from another prophet called Micah, who lived 800 years before Christ. And his prophecy was, but you, Bethlehem, in Judea, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among all the regions of Judea, for out of you will come a king who will be the shepherd to his people. So we think about that and we think, okay, how did God have to orchestrate things? He had to make sure you had a people that valued genealogy, that valued where they came from within these 12 sons, but he also had to make sure that these people would still be coming out of that region of land. So the orchestration that happens, at Sunlight, if we try to plan for 5 years, I'm here to tell you that's its own challenge because we don't know what the future holds. So to be planning and orchestrating for 1,300 years, that's just a miracle to me. So when you hear the little chorus, O little town of Bethlehem, now you know why it's important. Jesus was born there. And I just want to say, come, let us adore him. It's just one of those marvelous, marvelous stories. And may you enjoy the season. Thank you. Questions?